Good evening, or good morning, or afternoon, or whatever time of day you're listening to this. This is Gary, and this is a very special I'll Have a Beer and Talk Presents. Get it? As of the time I'm recording this exact thing you're hearing, I am actually drunk in a field in the exotic land known as Pendleton, Oregon, celebrating my wife's birthday. She's drunk in the field with me. Instead of posting an 8-ounce episode of the regular show in my absence, I decided to take this opportunity to play for you a podcast endeavor my wife started this year. And she brought me along for the ride. It's called Many Happy Returns. Conceptually, we're still tooling with the format, but the idea is we are, when the mood strikes us, having discussions about ways people can try to find happiness in these trying times. I'm going to play the inaugural episode here in a tick, and if you're intrigued, I suggest you subscribe to the show. You can find it at manyhappyreturns.podomatic.com or anywhere else you find your casted pods. Okay, let me get out of the way and present Many Happy Returns.
Welcome, welcome to Many Happy Returns. I am Jen Woodward, and joining me is my husband and co-life partner.
Hello, my name is Gary.
Yeah, what's your last name?
I like to keep that to myself.
It's not that hard to find people.
No, especially not me. I'm on the internet, you may have heard of it.
So this show is little thing that we are starting January 2018. It's going to be a monthly podcast, and it's kind of a weird art experiment. Let me explain.
What do you mean by weird art experiment? Sorry, I missed my cue.
I mean that, let me back up a little bit. Last fall, I tagged along with you, thanks to a wonderful friend of ours who's also going to be a guest on the podcast. Hooray!
Yay.
To this really cool thing called PodCon. So PodCon was this conference. This was the inaugural? How do you say that?
Inaugural.
Inaugural. Thank you. Inaugural year. And it was in the fall. It was a two-day conference. And at the conference, we heard podcast, and we went to different conversations about podcast and about the technical side of doing it and the cool side of doing it, all of the sides, you might say.
Then I might want to rewind a little bit further back, and the reason why we went to this,
our
good friend
up.
is really into podcasts, but also if you may or may not recognize my voice, I am the slightly inebriated voice behind the I'll Have a Beer and Talk podcast, which has been going on for 2+ years, almost 3 years.
Over 100 episodes.
Yeah, yeah. Where I basically have a beer and I talk about technology, stories that I found interesting, usually science, medicine related. Nothing too horribly geeky, but it's stuff that
I
find interesting, which can, I guess, border
geeky
into geek territory. So I've had the experience of making podcasts, and it was really energized by going to the PodCon conference, just because meeting other amateur podcasters. I'm pretty still amateur, but getting towards professional, maybe, kind of.
Yeah, no, I would say you're definitely putting in the time, the energy, the love.
Yeah, yeah, but we came away both inspired, and I was actually really pleased that you were inspired, because I do like working with you on things, and.
Well, I'm just to give you a little bit about me after your very nice intro about yourself, Gary.
My lovely wife.
I'm a visual artist, hence why I'm considering this an art project.
Hey, where'd you go to school?
I went to undergrad Sarah Lawrence College, and then I went to graduate school at the School of the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston.
And what are your accreditations?
That means I have a very expensive MFA that we will be paying for the rest of our lives.
Hooray! Hooray?
Yeah, hooray. And the reason that I wanted to do this was I wanted to see a few things. What it would be like to do a podcast with you on the regular. I consider a month on the regular because life moves fast. We're not getting any younger. a month is plenty commitment. If we had to do this every week, like your show,
like I'll have a beer talk weekly show.
I think that would maybe impact our relationship and not the best or happiest.
Hard
of
time
ways.
Balancing the day job and two full time podcasts.
Yeah. So yes, I'm a visual artist. I'm also a paper maker. We started a paper making studio together 5 years ago. And
what's that called?
It's called Pulp and Deckle.
And you can find that at pulpandeckle.com.
So when we started thinking about possible podcasts that we could do together, I was really intrigued by this idea and very much inspired by what we heard at PodCon. I was very intrigued by this idea of how we would do something that we both wanted to like kind of talk off the cuff about, maybe do a little bit of research about, and like how that could inform our relationship and our perspectives and just be something fun that we would do together. So that brings me to what the heck is Many Happy Returns? What is that? You've heard that before, right?
Why the hell are we doing this? Yes. Many Happy Returns, according to Wikipedia, which I'm sure you've heard of, is a greeting which is used by some on birthdays and by others in response to Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. In use since the 18th century, it's been used as a salutation to offer the hope that a happy day being marked would recur many more times.
Yeah, so I think one of the ways that I've heard it used is Winnie the Pooh. So, you know, he's saying many happy returns as a happy birthday. This is not a happy birthday show, don't worry. We're not just going to like sing happy birthday the whole time.
Yeah, and to go real dark, I know it mostly from the Prisoner episode titled Many Happy Returns, which had a pretty brutal ending. Happy!
but it is something, and there's also this stuff, if you look on Wikipedia, about this kind of history of it being a phrase used for transactions or investments. So, like, we wish you much high profit, which also this show is not about wishing you much high profit.
It's not about the Ferengi. Profit. Or underpants.
What the show is about is a return to happiness. So what does that mean?
What does that mean?
It means that it has been a rough year. We have had some serious stuff go down in 2017, and looking at 2018, I think, you know, what can we do to be happier people together, individually, in the community? What does that even mean? You know, let's dig into this subject of happiness and see what happens. Yeah.
Dig, 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 dig.
So that is Many Happy Returns. And we want to kind of revisit this theme every month, revisit a place of happiness and use that as kind of this grounding that we return to every month and share with you. So that all said, you know who we are and why we're here, what the point of this show is. One of the things that we wanted to do is try and give the every month episode kind of a structure, and a loose structure, because we don't want this to be like homework assignments where we have to like do all this stuff before we start doing the show. We just a little research, a little structure. Every month is going to have a theme, and the theme will help guide our conversation and our thoughts. So you want to tell everyone what this month's theme is, Gary?
This month's theme is self-care, which is hilarious because 2 weeks ago, you got a really bad cold and it lasted a week. And then yeah. I got it. So all last week, I had a really horrible cold. I just started feeling human again today. So yeah. Self-care is very much on my mind right now.
Yeah. And I think, you know, when we're starting out the new year, that's kind of people do these New Year's resolutions, and however you feel about that. One of them is pretty common is to do self-improvement of some sort. That's pretty central to what people do.
I am going to get my life back on track. It's usually the number one resolution of various phrasings of that, but that general idea, which I always find this whole resolution and doing it at the start of a new year a little crazy because you can start bettering yourself anytime. You don't have to wait for
It's never too late to not be a miserable human being.
Yeah. Just if you feel you need to make a change, just make the change.
No, I must do it January 1st on the money. So self-care this month is what we're diving into. And we're also kind of giving ourselves a project related to that theme. We failed miserably.
Well, the colds didn't help at all. But they originally had planned, probably like 3 weeks ago, was to build a fence in the front yard of our home.
Yeah. So the reason that we want to build a fence is that, and we don't have to go off on too much of a tangent of this, but like I hinted at that we had kind of a rough go, like so many people last year. And one of the things we experienced was this very unexpected event involving arson.
Yeah, we were the victims of arson.
Yeah.
Luckily, the house itself did not sustain much damage, but we had some pretty significant personal property loss, and definitely our sense of safety and security was completely thrown off. And so we just feel like we need to, you know, we need to build a wall, but not that wall. But we had that feeling.
That definitely not
suddenly
that wall.
Anyone that's wandering by, like they're coming to do something, hurt us, hurt our animals, hurt our friends.
Put this in perspective a little bit. We live a block off of a major transit center intersection. So there's just a high traffic area, which totally great, fine. We love the convenience of that. It's wonderful. But it does mean that like anyone that wanders away from that intersection is at our doorstep. So, you know, I work from home a lot of the time because of the papermaking studio is currently located at our home. And so we just wanted to build, and not like a moat with alligators or something crazy. We just wanted
just something with lasers. You know,
something modest with lasers.
Yeah, just like fencing off our driveway and fencing out the front yard. So you have to go through a gate to get to the front door. Just as not really an impenetrable barrier, but just a more psychological one saying, you know, don't come over this unless you actually are supposed to be coming through this barrier.
So we went so far as, I mean, guys, we were doing so great. We went out and we went to the hardware store and we measured everything like responsible adults do.
And wrote down the measurements too. Didn't just try to remember them.
And then we went to the hardware store and we compared different possibilities. We're like, hey, this would be really great and not too hard. And then we got sick. And when we got sick, everything was kind of like, all right, well, I'm just going to hang out on the couch and not do anything and or work, like, you know, do my day job kind of work as much as I can. Everything else is...
I'm just going to sit here and be miserable.
It was very much like that. And so much so that I think we both at the beginning were like, is this the flu? Because the flu is crazy this year.
And it's really funny. I found a chart that the CDC put out like comparing flu and cold symptoms. And we're basically 50-50 both ways.
I know. So. It was very like, I don't know. We had the best of intentions and we even started to follow through with those intentions. But at the end of the day, a fence was just not happening this January. However,
instead, so I record my I'll Have a Beer and Talk and what I quote as being an undisclosed location somewhere underneath Portland, Oregon, which is technically true. We are in an undisclosed location somewhere underneath Portland, Oregon.
That is true.
It's a kind of sound deadened room in the basement of our home. It's underground.
Yeah.
And in Portland, Oregon. It was also doubles as our backup bedroom when family visits because they take our master suite. So there's a futon down here and a desk and a bunch of just stuff that's built up. And I'm, because it's my workspace, it's not exactly the cleanest. It works enough for me to move around in it. But we had to kind of tear down, rearrange, rebuild so we can actually have two people recording at the same time.
Yeah. And as you were saying while we were working on this, Gary, I feel like it was a smooth process.
Which is not normal for us.
Yeah, considering that, like, I think we both get a little anxious about these things and we're like, oh, I have my plan of attack and you maybe have a different
plan of attack. Yeah, and that's kind of the cause of the strife when we do projects like this, like moving stuff or building something, is we don't really talk about our approach. We just kind of start doing it, and then
one, two, three.
Very different approaches that we definitely butt heads and get a little short with each other, get a little frustrated.
Yeah.
But you know, it all comes back around because you know,
yeah,
we actually like each other. But
with I don't this know one, what you're I, talking about.
I had kind of sketched out layout rearrangements within. It's a small room, so there's not a whole lot we can do with the furniture that's in it, but sketched out a transition plan to do one stage and then later on do a second stage. And we had looked at that right before diving in, and we actually worked quite well. We communicated what we were tackling at each point,
yeah,
and were
yeah
able to just get it mostly done, and it worked out great.
Yeah.
And we'll have some photos
yeah
to share
for sure. Yeah, I'm happy actually that. And maybe this is a good segue into like more about what we're talking about with self-care and the rest of the show. But I'm happy that things didn't go the way that we planned, which if anyone that knows me is not necessarily something that I would normally say. I'm not trying to say I'm uptight, but sometimes I'm kind of uptight. It was a good alternate assignment for, and something that definitely we both needed to do as part of like something that is positive for our well-being,
yeah,
and will
yeah
make doing this show a lot easier. You know, sometimes you have to make it work given, you know, life and whatever, but you can make the time to make things improve your enjoyment of a process. We could have made this podcast with the room the way that it was, but I would have been like crammed in the corner up against the like crazy piece of furniture.
Yeah, we'll have before and after photos. I have some before photos, and
I'm really glad we did it. It feels good. And that's one of the things I think about self-care is that like it's has this thing that, you know, in doing some research, I found a article from NPR, and this article is called The Millennial Obsession with Self-Care.
Although in my browser, it's The Snake Person Obsession with Self-Care, because I'm running Millennial to Snake People, plug it in Chrome.
And this article is from June 4th, 2017, from author Christiana Silva. And it's a little harsh on like saying that self-care is just this kind of, you know, for entitled snowflakes, blah, 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 blah. But it does go into a little bit. I like they mention and reference that self-care isn't actually something new.
Yeah, I like this quote here. Ancient Greeks saw it as a way to make people more honest citizens who are more likely to care for others.
Yeah, exactly. I thought that was very interesting. And that there's a quote from a 1988 book from Audre Lorde that says, caring for myself is not self-indulgence. It is self-preservation. And that is an act of political warfare. I mean, that seems pretty...
A burst of lights.
It seems pretty Audre apt for the times that we're living in. It's like taking care of yourself isn't,
don't,
you know...
Don't let everything tear you down because that's what they're trying to do.
Exactly. Yeah. Like... That they reference that in A Handmaid's Tale. Yeah, if anybody out there has watched, talk about some people that needed
the happy family fun show.
To have some self-care. I mean, I know that society doesn't have room for that, but that's what I'm saying is when life is really difficult, you have to make that space for yourself so that you can get out there and fight the good fight. It's not all about like getting a manicure and whatever other thing that people tell you is a positive. I mean, it can be. I'm not trying to denigrate that. It's you can have more frivolous. And this is something that you'll hear us talking about on the show is not everything has to be so serious. Sometimes things can be like lighthearted and very necessary. But I think the tendency with self-care is to see it through this more frivolous lens. So I'm more interested in the like meat of self-care rather than like the workout regimen or, you know.
Yeah, the article kind of points out, according to the Pew Research Center, that more millennials reported making personal improvement commitments than any generation before them. I'm wondering if the Pew Research Center made that comparison or the writer of this article did. But they're saying that, that in general, snake people do self-care stuff twice as much as baby boomers do, which with workout regimens, diet plans, life coaching, therapy, and apps to improve their personal well-being. Because millennials. But
I don't necessarily think that's all bad.
It's not bad. It's because it becomes some slightly trendy looking from the outside. I'm sure a lot of people who aren't in on the trend are like, snake people.
Get out of here with your, exactly.
Yeah, get out of here. But that's what's interesting is that they kind of, it looks like they're saying that this increase has happened simply because the internet, like people are, which is the great beauty of the internet, which we already know, all know the bad stuff about it. But the great beauty of it is it's opening up people to other points of view, and everybody's kind of sharing all these different points of view, and everyone's gaining knowledge from all these different points of view,
which is really super powerful and awesome. As kind of a counterpoint to that NPR article, I found another kind of dive into self-care that was about from the Thought Catalog, which I wasn't familiar with Thought Catalog before, but you know, the article is titled "This is what self-care really means," because it's not all salt baths and chocolate cake.
Although I have some self-care I gotta open right here.
which I'm a little bummed, like, it's not all salt baths and chocolate cake. I thought it was totally, I know what we were just saying, but forget all of that. Isn't it all about salt baths and chocolate cake
and beer?
So this is really going back to what I was saying before about the meatier side of self-care, and that doing things that maybe you don't want to necessarily do, like rearranging the podcast studio so that you and your wife can comfortably sit in it without it being a burden, that that's an important and healthy thing to do for yourself. That is caring for yourself. The thing that I really was drawn to at the heart of this article was this, and I'm just going to read it because I think it's stated much better than I could paraphrase. So in reference to self-care, it means being the hero of your life, not the victim. It means rewiring what you have until your everyday life isn't something you need therapy to recover from. It is no longer choosing a life that looks good over a life that feels good. It is giving the hell up on some goals so you can care about others. It is being honest, even if that means you aren't universally liked. It is meeting your own needs so you aren't anxious and dependent on other people.
What does that mean?
Being the hero of your own life is something that really resonates with me. I like that idea, and I want to start maybe sketching out some drawings about this. Like, what kind of heroic things could I give to myself that might be kind of hilarious and ordinary that make me a personal hero? How do you imagine yourself, Gary, being the hero of your own life?
Well, for me, mostly it comes with producing my weekly podcast every week, because it's kind of a terror. I don't want to do it. And then I just kind of buckle down, like, I got to do this because I tell myself I have an audience. I actually have a returning audience that is coming to hear me talk about stuff. So I need to do it primarily for myself, even though that's an incentive from other people's expectations. But I'm like, I have pride in myself. I will keep bringing it every week.
Yeah. Yeah. And you are the instigator of that podcast. You didn't get like a fat paycheck or sponsor or somebody saying like, hey, we want you to make this weekly podcast. You said, I want
to
do this.
I want to learn how to make a podcast, but I didn't have any talent. So I'm going to be the talent too. And I don't have any writers. So I'll be the writer, and I'll be the editor, and I'll be the technical director, and I'll just do this.
I just started doing it. The podcast hero of my own life.
And it just became a thing. Like, this is just what I do every 7 to 10 days. Just because I do it. I enjoy the actual recording part of it. I love the editing. I hate the writing. And it's great. And I get to drink beer while doing it too. So that's its own little reward within the show.
And that's one of the reasons why I didn't want to have this be like a more scripted, like we're going to write up these big mega thoughts about what we want to discuss. Partially because I don't want it to be this, like, here's another thing we have to do every week.
That was a big key for me for doing I'll Have a Beer and Talk, is I don't want it to become work. I want to keep it being this fun thing that I do, whereas it skirts the edge of where I just don't want to do it. But again, I'm my boss with this. That's why I give myself every 7 to 10 days to put out a new episode. If I can't do it within 7 days, mulligan, try it again the next day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I think one of the ways that I've tried to be heroic in my life is to give myself, just like you're talking about, opportunities. If those opportunities are not happening in the universe, like if I'm not getting a teaching gig, if I'm not, you know, doing something that I feel like I'm good at and I want to share with others, then like, how can I create that experience for myself? So starting the papermaking studio was a huge, like, I'm going to just be heroic. And I could not have done that without Gary. Like, that was definitely a joint team effort.
I moved heavy things.
But you were also the, like, support system and the cheerleader and a lot of things that, like, you know, go unrecognized mostly until somebody gets an award and is like, I want to thank my husband for being there for me.
It's a major award.
but for real, like, having you be there to help, you know, give the scaffolding to my heroic efforts really made a huge difference.
And it's not so much that you're relying on someone else's approval of going through this process. No. To make that clear here. That it's, you're setting yourself a goal and you're able to accomplish it. Yes, you do need assistance.
Yeah.
Depending on how high you're trying to jump. You know, we need a little leg up, but you did it. You did it yourself. I was merely there to catch you when you stumbled a little bit. But for the most part, you did most of the work. It's a mutual admiration society going on here. So I'm trying to defuse that a little bit. That you can do these things by yourself too. It's not some magical formula. You just need a second person.
No. And okay, so that brings me to something that we have actually talked about before that I wanted to bring up, which is that you have to find your own happiness. So this show, we wanted to be sure to put this in here, and we're just now getting to this. So sorry that we didn't say this sooner. This is not 10 keys to unlocking your great happiness.
This is not an advice show. Neither of us is a licensed therapist. The closest thing we come to that is that a friend of ours is a psychologist. And yeah, we also know a therapist, too. Not professionally, but personally.
Yes. So, yes, we know people that do this for a living, but we are not those people.
Don't listen to a word I say.
This is just a conversation, a think piece, an art project. It's a lot of messy stuff, but it's not definitely like, hey, we've got all of the answers, because hell no, we do not have all the answers.
We're just that weird couple that actually, like, talks to each other about very weighty philosophical concepts, like usually between watching episodes of The Flash and Future Man and Rick and Morty.
Yeah, when usually while we're drinking, you know, that definitely helps.
Well, always drinking.
But, you know, it just is
it's not a promotion of alcohol as a solution to all of life's problems.
It's
something that works for us, and it's heavily implied, especially with I'll Have a Beer and Talk, that we're alcoholics, but no, we're not. We drink in moderation.
Yeah, and the conversation is just to kind of loosen up those inhibitions with a little taste of something pleasurable, but not to like get crunk. That is definitely not the goal.
The sacred pint alone can unbind the tongue. That's from James Joyce.
Yes, exactly. So making us a little more glib, a little less self-conscious, a little more chatty.
And it allows us to make neural connections that we wouldn't normally make completely sober.
Yeah, exactly. So there's our little diatribe about how we will probably be drinking during most of these podcast episodes.
It's no big deal.
Yeah.
We won't make a big deal out of it, so please don't make a big deal out of it.
So tangentially related to this idea of self-care is the idea of adulting.
Adulting.
What is that?
I'm so tired of adulting.
Mean to you.
Yeah. So you had this article from Time entitled "This Is What Adulting Means."
Thank you.
In the most recent issue of the American Speech Journal, which is a journal for linguistics, as you can tell from the name American Speech, they have these two definitions of adulting. One is to behave in an adult manner, engage in activities associated with adulthood, which I don't really know what that means. What is adulthood? You're avoiding trying to define it. But yeah. Their second definition is of adulting is to make someone behave like an adult, turn someone into an adult. But what?
What is adult? What does that mean? What is adulting? So just like the other article we were talking about, there's, you know, it's hard to avoid the snake people. I hate to tell you this, but they are the future.
Well, they're inheriting the mess that our generation before us created. We're just like in the transition period, so.
Yeah. But this comes up just like with the self-care conversations, mostly around millennials and this like theme of adulting that people are kind of both poking fun at and celebrating in what some would say are odd ways, doing normal things like buying a house or pumping your own gas,
doing your own taxes.
Just the regular stuff that, as a kid, you don't have to take care of. Your parents do all that stuff. It's a big mystery.
I mean, what it really means is starting to take control of your own life, having some agency and like understanding that you are the master of your destiny.
And that's how I think, for me, this relates to self-care, is when you're actively, quote-unquote, adulting, you are being, you know, responsible for yourself in a meaningful way. That sounds strange, meaningful way, but I'm trying to get at this thought of that you can't rely on anybody but yourself.
At the end of the day, yes.
Yeah, that there's this kind of like, and I'm not, man, I'm definitely not an advocate of this like bootstrapping mentality of that, like you have to pick yourself up and dust yourself up. I mean, sometimes I am. You've heard enough of us talking so far to realize that like support systems are important, but having this sense of defined like what your needs are and expressing them, whether they be big or small. So, you know, with adulting, and I think that could be big or small too. It could be like something really simple, like, yay, I paid all my bills on time.
Hooray!
or it could be something really big, like I'm moving across the country because I
quit my job that I hated and got going to do something I really want to do.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think those things are this kind of interesting blend of adulting and self-care. And there's this tendency to look at all of this and say, like, how narcissistic, how self-absorbed can you be? Like, how much looking inside is necessary, you know, to happiness, getting back to this idea of happiness. And I think what that comes around to is this idea of, like, meaning and happiness and how we create all of, like, all of these things are, like, this intricate web. All these threads that we weave together.
Internal interactions and influences and experiences. And it all just gets this big ball of mess that it's hard to deal with. Because right now it seems that pop culture is the major educator on people how to be people. Like sitcoms and romantic comedies and all that stuff. And that's not really the best teacher.
Well, outside of your, you know, your influences of family and friends, that's a pretty huge influence. And, you know, we are very self-selective, even as we've talked about this, like, age of, even you know, expanded internet and communication and all this stuff. Yeah. But, you know, as we've seen over the past year, we really divide into these categories of people and opinions and thoughts. And, you know, that actually, I think, can be really detrimental to happiness. I mean, it can from a very shallow point of view.
It can create a support group with insular within its own self, but then it's not, it won't give any of that care to anyone outside of said group, which can end up isolating people if they don't conform to whatever the arbitrary rules are.
Yeah, and creating that meaning, that sweet spot of whatever is important to you and supporting each other and yourself, you getting off on a weird tangent here, but
it was the best kind.
You can, I think you can develop really important, meaningful relationships outside of that self-selected bubble that maybe open you up to experiences and thoughts that give you profound happiness and meaning. Not that it's not possible, but like maybe just as unexpected and is really amazing. So I wanted to reference this article since we're talking about meaning and happiness. That is from the Greater Good magazine, which is a science-based insights for a meaningful life from the UC Berkeley Greater Good Science Center, which I had no idea that this even existed.
That's a lot of words.
So many words.
Greater Good magazine, science-based insights for a meaningful life.
Yeah. And the article is, it's kind of a few years old. It's from 2014. It's called, Is a Happy Life Different from a Meaningful One? And the authors are delving into these kind of studies that have been done. And they're specifically citing a study where, so there's a professor of psychology at Florida State University back in 2014 that did this study, and 397 people were part of it, 397 adults. And they're looking for correlations between happiness, meaning, and other aspects of their lives. So behavior, moods, relationships, health, stress, etc. And of course, they found that a meaningful life and a happy life often go hand in hand, but not always.
I was going to say, they are not combined concepts.
And that is kind of the what they're interested in, is what are the differences between meaningful life and happy life? And here are some findings that they, five major differences between happy life, meaningful life. Do you want to get into this, Care?
Happy people satisfy their wants and needs, but that seems largely irrelevant to a meaningful life. Basically, health, wealth, and ease of life are all related to happiness, but not meaningfulness.
And happiness involves being focused on the present, whereas meaningfulness involves thinking more about the past, present, and future and the relationship between them. So while happiness was often fleeting, meaningfulness lasted longer.
Meaningfulness is derived from giving to other people. Happiness comes from what they give to you.
And meaningful lives involve stress and challenges.
And self-expression is important to meaning, but not happiness.
Okay, so thinking about this list of differences between meaning and happiness, and where do we go with that? Like, I want both. I want both meaning and happiness.
Well, I mean, it seems to me that the bullet points to really strive for is to give to other people as being part of meaningfulness, because they will give back to you and that creates happiness. I think that's the general idea. It's just, you got to be meaningful. You have to look at things holistically, understand the past, present, and future of situations, and then act according to that information, as opposed to it's doing something for someone else because you know it will help, as opposed to doing something for someone else so you get something in return.
Yeah, and I think that that's something that, like, when you were talking about pop culture and what's lacking, we are pretty focused on this instant gratification.
Oh, and like, binary things.
Yeah, bad. Like, I do something for you, and you give me lots of praise or something in return, or.
Yeah. And I know we're saying this is many happy returns, but we want that return to happen organically, not as part of a transactional interaction.
Oh, and this is an internal process of returning to happiness. When I think many happy returns, I think this feeling that I have inside that is, you know, coming from this place of self-care, from being an adult, taking care of my needs, you know, just coming back to this theme, cleaning the house if I'm feeling really frustrated with it, and maybe not, maybe, you know, doing something else that I need to do that is more important for my
something self-care. With the act of doing actually makes me feel better, as opposed to the what I'm trying to accomplish as well.
Yeah.
Like I do with podcasts.
And I know that what they're trying to look at, like with this study and with this, the thrust of this article is that, like, you know, happiness isn't necessarily about this hedonistic pleasure, that, you know, meaning is really more altruistic and defined by our social ties and our place in the world, this larger contextual feeling than this momentary fleeting pleasure, which is often associated with happiness. So that's why I think that's kind of interesting when you're talking about in terms of self-care, that self-care is usually this, like we were saying before, this very kind of frivolized, is that a word? Frivolized?
Maybe infantilized. seen as frivolous. I don't think frivolous is a word. It is a word now.
Frivolized.
Is a many happy returns word. We are getting it trademarked and copyrighted. And if you want to use it, you got to speak to us. And minimum pay, bill, minimum rental is $100 to use.
But, you know, the frivolity of self-care, I know that's a word.
Well, being seen as weak, that you have to kind of hunker down and maintain oneself, which is not weakness whatsoever. It's actually really, really insanely important.
It's a point of strength. And, like, definitely, I would say, you know, we're not parents, but we have lots of friends that have had kids in the past few years. And, like, essential to their well-being and the happiness of themselves and those around them, their family and their children, is this, like, are they taking care of themselves? Are they able to, like, get enough sleep and have a balanced diet and all? Because
they still have social interactions?
If you don't do those things, then everything suffers, you know, and that's based on that idea of adulting. And it's not actually the, like, sexy parts of self-care that give you real meaning and happiness. It's the, and again, this is not to say that I think you can have both. I think you can, like, take your chocolate salt bath. Is that what they said before?
Sure. Avocado salt bath.
And you can also mow the grass or do whatever.
that come from? I've had a lot of years.
Whatever thing that, like, is, I mean, I hate to use this word, but more of like chore. It shouldn't be a chore, right? You should do these things because you take pride and
it needs,
you know,
to be integrated into your life.
Yeah. Which
it can seem like a chore at the start, but then it kind of becomes natural. Like, who likes to floss, right? I didn't really go regular to dentist for 10, 20 years, and I have some serious problems, and I've got most of it rectified, but I just, like, I want to keep my teeth. I'm just barely over 40. So I just, it hurts so much, but I started being very regimental about my dental care. And now it's just, I just do it. It's just become part of my routine.
Yeah. So you were, I don't know what kind of hero you could call yourself for having good oral hygiene, but, like,
Fluoride Man.
Yes, exactly. You were Fluoride Man in your own life, which hey, you know, if you don't do that stuff, then it leads to much unhappiness in the long term.
Very expensive unhappiness.
Yeah. And that also is a whole thing, like, you know, being sad because you have no dollars.
And then eventually no teeth.
I mean, it's a depressing road. So come on, fluoride, man. Yeah, we need him.
I turned around and made a routine and I seem to have saved things for now. So we'll see. Yeah. Fingers crossed.
Yay.
Teeth crossed.
What? Can you do that?
Not anymore.
That's a good thing. That's a good thing not to be able to cross your teeth. Yeah. So I think we've delved into this idea pretty thoroughly. The only other thing that I would like to do in this podcast is our Art-O-Rama art giveaway. I think I briefly mentioned this at the beginning. So because I'm an artist, one of the things I wanted to integrate every month into this podcast was a giving back, a way to engage with hopefully this community as it grows, and to say, hey, here's something that I can share with the audience. So as Gary knows, one of the things that we were organizing today in our basement as part of this podcast studio restructure was a lot of art that I've got laying around from over the years. Much of being an artist is storing your work, at least when you make stuff that, if you're not like mega super huge famous, you're going to end up with things that don't sell, or that maybe you don't want to sell for a while. You want to hang on to them and look at them. So we have, you know, a few things hanging around in the basement that I am ready to let go of. And I would love to have people enjoy in their homes or in wherever, office spaces, wherever they want to enjoy them. And let that art be free, live in the world. Others can experience it. So every month I will be posting on the Mini Happy Return social media pages. So you can find us on Instagram, Mini Happy Returns Podcast, on Facebook, also Mini Happy Returns Podcast. And yeah, you can go there and I'll post an image of the artwork that I'm giving away for the month. All you have to do is reply with your name and I will put your name in the hat. And then we're going to do this fun drawing every month where the only thing that, like, disclaimer here, if you live far away, you have to pay for the shipping. So I can't make this a, like, financial burden on us. It needs to...
We're doing the show for free. We're giving you free art. You just have to pay for shipping.
Yeah, exactly. You need to pay for the shipping. And it's not going to be like, oh, the shipping costs $5,000.
No, it's directly going to be what the cost is.
Yeah, whatever the cost is.
United States Postal Service.
And I'll figure that out with the winner. But just something to be aware of. If you don't live in the Portland metro region, you know, if you do live in the Portland, Oregon metro region,
we might even bring it to you or meet you somewhere.
Yeah, we can hang out together if you want.
Win-win, free.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so.
I do have to point out this hat is a Deerstalker hat.
Woo!
Like Sherlock Holmes. Just like to let you know.
We'll post some pictures of the hat.
Okay, I'm going to get the drums set.
Okay,
ready?
All right, we're ready.
This is me on the drums.
Yes.
Right. Ready?
Yes.
And the winner is?
And the winner is John. Congratulations, John.
Just John?
Well, we're not going to use last names.
Well, you use yours.
We're making this podcast, okay?
Right. John, you are the winner.
Yay, John. Woo. So we'll be in touch with you about getting your free art. Art-O-Rama.
One art, please.
Hooray. All right. Any last thoughts about self-care and happiness and why we're doing this, who we are?
I think I stumbled my way through. I don't sound like too much of a drunken fool, so that's good.
Yeah,
that's my happiness. Yeah. My happiness is beer, you, or cats. Not in that order.
That's
actually
very...
you, then beer, then cats, then chickens, then family and friends, and there.
Well, we'll be talking more about our happiness every month, and we would love to hear about your happiness. So please interact with us on the social media pages and let us know, you know, what you're thinking about the show and what you're thinking about our topics. We would love to engage with you.
And where can they find Many Happy Returns?
Right on Instagram now. And okay. On Facebook.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, once we get the URLs written down, we'll also say them as well.
Yeah, I already did. Where were you during that part of the show?
I'm also the technical director of the show right now.
You're
so
just
I was
totally zoning
directing.
Out, thinking about, like,
I was
don't
busy
know,
getting the drum set up so I could do the drum roll and the cymbal hit, but nobody respects the technical director. I understand. Nobody respects the technical director.
I know. Yeah.
Sit over here.
Okay. My come back.
Right. Oh yeah.
Yeah, we gotta wrap up
the show.
Yeah. Okay. So I hope that you will join us for many months of many happy returns.
And I'm Gary.
And I'm Jen.
And be happy.
Yay, happiness.